I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. In this episode of The Unmistakable Creative, Stu McLaren discusses how to make our lives and our businesses better by being more creative, how to use stimuli for creative breakthroughs, and prioritizing the important over the urgent. And don't forget, applications for the Instigator Experience open up in 2 weeks. You can learn more at theinstigatorexperience.com. Before we start today's episode, I want to tell you about both of our sponsors. It's that time of year when you're probably reflecting on this past year and setting goals for the new one. And a big part of accomplishing your goals is going to involve a combination of information and skills. Downpour, who I mentioned on a few previous episodes, is an audiobook source that allows you to rent instead of buy. So you end up getting 70% off the retail price of audiobooks, and it works on all iOS and Android devices. Use the promo code CREATIVE, and you'll get your first book for just $3.95. Now, let's talk about skills. Who's curated the best of online courses in alternative education and put it all under one roof to help you obtain the skills you need to succeed in your career. They even put together a free and really useful toolkit that you can download by visiting promo.skilledup.com/creative. That might have been a mouthful, so once again, that's promo.skilledup.com/creative. Stu, welcome to The Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So I came across you by way of our mutual friend and former guest, Liz D'Alto, who had nothing but amazing things to say about you. So on that note, can you tell us a bit about your story, your journey, and how that has brought you to the work that you do and what you're up to in the world today?
Yeah, I would say the biggest part of my journey has been that I just keep putting one foot in front of the other and taking a step. You know, if you would have asked me back in college if I would be doing what I'm doing now, I would have probably laughed and had no idea what I was going to be talking about. But anyway, when I was in college, one of the things that I went through for business, got my honors business degree, but realized I was like a square peg in a round hole in that I just didn't fit the traditional business model. I didn't like wearing shirts and ties. I didn't see myself working in a cubicle. And that's essentially what they had trained us to be, was just corporate drones. And it just wasn't jiving for me. So I was looking for something a little bit different, something that that I was excited about. And so even though I signed on the dotted line to start with a big company coming out of college, and my parents were happy, and it was everything they had ever wanted for me, and I decided to actually go in a completely different direction. I was really passionate about the subject of creativity. And there was a class that I took that completely transformed my schooling career. I went from failing out of my first year to graduating top of my class. And it all centered on the subject of how to think more creatively. And so I was really passionate about that. And so my career began as a professional speaker. I was traveling around to high schools and colleges, and I was teaching other students how to utilize creativity in their schoolwork and their relationships and their job applications, and basically how to make life better by being more creative. And that's how my path began. And then from there, I quickly realized that schools could only afford so much, and I could only speak so many times a year. And so I just multiplied the two together, and that was basically like my maximum earning potential. And I didn't like that number. I wanted to get beyond that. And so I started looking for other ways to leverage what it is that I knew, and that's what led me online. And that experience of learning how to use the internet to reach more people and sell more products and so forth, I really began to develop an area of expertise there. And long story short, I went down the path of learning how to package and sell my information in a more efficient way. And that ultimately meant I wanted to try to sell it in a membership site. Well, the challenge was at the time, this was 2008, that I wanted to do that, there just weren't any tools that were user-friendly to use. And I was moaning and groaning to a friend of mine about this, and he made the suggestion, well, why don't we create the software ourselves? And I remember at that time hearing what he said and just kind of laughing. And I just said, dude, like, there's no way I can create that. I'm not a programmer. I have no idea how to code. And he said, well, listen, I have someone who's working with me who is a programmer. Mm-hmm. You're fairly decent in Photoshop. You know, why don't you do some mock-ups and then we'll go from there. And we did. And a month later, we had a beta version. We sold it to a group of friends. And then a month after that, we went live. October 22nd, 2008 was the first day that we went live. And that software, which is now Wishlist Member, just totally took off. It powers over now 54,000 online communities and membership sites. And that really was, I just decided to put all my chips in that basket. I stopped all the other stuff that I was doing and then just looked to grow that company. And then just very recently, literally a month ago, I made the most difficult decision of my career, and that was to sell my interest in Wishlist. And it was definitely by far the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my career. But the reason that I ended up doing that was because there's some projects that I've wanted to do for a long time that I kept putting on the back burner. And I realized that if these projects are really important to me, I've got to create the space to be able to fully immerse myself in them. And so that meant making some tough decisions and selling Wishlist, which was a very profitable, very successful company, and I love my team, and I love my business partners, but that's ultimately the direction that I decided to go, and that's where I'm at today.
So, you know, I want to go back to the very beginning of this. You know, one of the things you said was that you felt like a square peg in a round hole, and I get the feeling that almost everybody listening to that feels that way to some degree. That's why they've chosen to do the work that they do, or that's why they're aspiring to do what they ultimately want to do. And I guess, you know, I'm curious about how we take that sense that we're a square peg in a round hole and translate it into something actually meaningful in the world, as opposed to just feeling frustrated with it.
Yeah, for me, I think at the time, like, this was 2002, mm-hmm. and I think the internet was, you know, really just starting to emerge, in the sense that people were starting to realize that there were some cool things that we could all do with the internet. We could reach more people. We could sell products and services to people that we would never otherwise be able to reach. And I think at that time it was exciting, but it was really raw, and there weren't really many boundaries that were clearly defined as per se. So it was a really scary time. But the thing that I always share with people is that if you're feeling like a square peg in a round hole, there's nothing wrong with that, but you can't sit still and moan and groan and whine and complain about it. What you've got to do is you got to take a step in a direction. You know, so for me, like, that meant I was really passionate about the subject of creativity, and I wanted to share that message with more people. I had no idea that there was even like a professional speaking career or business or anything of that nature. But what I did do was I knew I wanted to share that message with more people. So I looked into it, found out that there were actually people who made a career out of speaking. And so I did the very next thing that I did was contact my old high school and just said, listen, I've got this message I want to share. I'm willing to come speak to your students for free in exchange for some referrals to additional schools. And they said, absolutely. And that was my next step. And that's kind of, you know, what ended up being the step that led to everything else. You know, had I not even done that, I would still probably be moaning and groaning that I'm a square peg in a round hole, but stuck in a job or a career that I hate. So I think the biggest thing for everybody is that if you do feel that, and we all feel it to a certain extent, but you got to take a step in a direction. You got to do something about it. You can't sit still on it.
What do you think keeps people sitting still?
Fear. Absolutely. You know, like, we, at that time, I remember feeling tremendously guilty of starting this speaking career, because my parents were too, still are, tremendously hardworking individuals. You know, I've learned so much from them from a work ethic standpoint. You know, we immigrated from England over to Canada when I was six, and we never really had a lot of money, but we always had enough just to get by. My dad worked 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon at a high school in a classroom with people with special needs. And then 4 nights a week, he would work 8 at night till 8 in the morning. And yet he was still at every basketball game, soccer game, track meet. He was just an amazing and incredible dad, but he worked a ton. And likewise, my mom was the same way. You know, she worked 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon and at an elementary school with kids with autism. And then 4 nights a week, she worked in a really upscale restaurant. And so they both worked 2 full-time jobs to give us kids a life that was never, we always had just enough. We always were, you know, we were always involved in different activities, but money was always tight in the house. So here I am graduating university. We managed to get, I got all the way through, graduated top of my class, and I got this great offer to go to work for this company where I'd be making more money than both my parents combined right out of the gate. I'd have a company car, benefits, everything. And I remember feeling a huge weight on my shoulders, knowing that that wasn't the direction that I really wanted to go. And yet I could see the pure joy in my parents' face and eyes and in their voice. I could hear it in their voice because they felt like all the sacrifice that they had made up to that point was for that moment, you know, to know that their son was going to be immediately in a better position financially than they were, and all that hard work was worth it. So I remember feeling the burden of that guilt and then realizing that, you know what, I've got to make this decision for me. And in making that decision for me, I can help make them proud in other ways. And so I think that kind of situation is common. You know, people feel fear in some degree in terms of taking that next first step toward what it is they really want to do, and it just keeps them stuck.
You know, it's interesting to bring up parental acceptance. I mean, it's something that I've personally spent a lot of time struggling with as I've gone down this journey. Again, I don't know that that's an isolated feeling to a lot of people. That's one of those really interesting things because, you know, I always say, you know, are they going to live with the consequences of the choices you've made? Not necessarily. And yet at the same time, you want to, you know, have this strong relationship with them. And I guess, you know, overcoming that need for parental acceptance, I mean, not just parental acceptance, I think in general, there's a degree of acceptance we're all seeking from the people in our lives. And I'm wondering how we overcome that, you know, sense of seeking acceptance, but without being an asshole, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I totally get it. I mean, for me, it was challenging. You know, like I said, I really wanted to make my parents proud. I mean, they had made so much sacrifice for my sister and I, and it was difficult, you know. And even when I started my career, I was still living at home with them. And, you know, I remember having a conversation with my dad and saying to him, like, give me a year, you know, just give me a year. And at the end of that year, if my situation hasn't improved and I'm not to, you know, we're not seeing progress, then I'll get a corporate job type thing. He was very supportive. Both my parents were very supportive. I mean, they ultimately want their kids, you know, my parents wanted, you know, us kids to be happy. And so they were just scared for us. You know, they didn't want my life to be a financial struggle like theirs had been. And they saw this as an opportunity, being like the corporate job. So I think that we all struggle for acceptance, you know, whether it be with our peers, what have you. But I think at some point we all mature to a certain degree as well, and we realize that it's our life. And, you know, for us to make the impact we want to have in this world and to live the life that we want to live, we've got to make progress towards the things that we want to do. And by making progress towards the things that we want to do, ultimately, we'll win the acceptance of those that love us most. And that's kind of what I held on to. I held on to the belief that, you know, if I can make my own career and my way work, that's what will really make my parents happy. If I can get the end result, which is, you know, they don't want me struggling financially, they want me to be safe and secure and okay. If I can get that and do it in my own way, then it's a win-win for everybody.
Let me ask you this. You've been talking about progress, and one of the things that comes up over and over when I talk to people here is how long they've actually been at what they're doing by the time they're here to talk to me on the show. And you know, this came up actually in a Facebook comment that somebody made is around, you know, an article that I was working on. Is how do you keep going when it doesn't feel like you're making progress?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, an early mentor of mine said that too many people give up right before they're about to experience the inflection point. And that he told me that in 2004, and I never forgot it, because I think that as when you're going out on your own, if you're that square peg in the round hole, if you're trying to do your own projects, if you're trying to create your own business, if you're trying to do something that's not been done before, you've got to have an element of stubbornness to you. You know, and I would say that stubbornness and perseverance are two of the characteristics that probably don't get enough credit for the way that they contribute to success. And I would say, like, yeah, it sucks. You know, when you're working your tail off and you're trying to do everything you can to make progress, and it's just not happening, or it's not happening as fast as you would like, it can really sap the energy out of you know, what you're trying to accomplish. But you've got to have, it all comes back to your why. You know, what's your reason why you're wanting to do the project, to go in the direction you're going, to go to create that new path? What's your why? If you're really tight and secure on the why, I think that it doesn't matter what obstacles you'll face, you'll find a way to get through them. But unless you're clear about your why, then it can get really demotivating. You can really get sapped of energy, and you can feel negative about the progress. But if you're focused on the why and you're clear about that, I think that really helps.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We've had Simon Sinek here, and for those of you guys listening, I'll link up the interview in the show notes. Definitely come and check that out. The other thing that I've been thinking a lot about is this idea that, you know, when people start, I think the people who stick with it, on some level, they just believe that something big will come from all of it. And they never lose that sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, my dad shared a quote with me when I was 13 years old. And he said, faith is to believe in what you do not see. And the reward for that faith is to see what you believe. And the quote is from St. Augustine. I've never forgotten that. You know, and he told me that quote when I was, like I said, 13 years old, and I was in my first year of high school, and I had just lost as a final candidate for athlete of the year. And I was, you know, upset and discouraged. And he said to me, he's like, you know what, this year you didn't even know that you were going to be nominated for athlete of the year. He's like, but next year, now you know what you need to do in order to win it. And he said, you just got to have faith in all of the things that you're going to do throughout the year, that it will translate into the result that you want. And he shared that quote with me. And ultimately, I ended up winning Athlete of the Year every year thereafter. And I think that it was a great lesson for me, in that sometimes the things that are most valuable to us are the things that we can't see. They're the things that we have to have faith. We have to, you know, believe in something that that isn't tangible to us right now. But the reward for that faith, as the quote said, is that eventually, with enough perseverance, we will see what we believe. And I think as long as you are making forward progress and you're putting one foot in front of the other and you're trying to make progress, that's really where the rubber meets the road. Where I get, where I see a disconnect is for those people who have a lot of faith, but they don't do anything about it. Like they don't take a step in any direction. They just think that something that what they want is just going to show up on their front doorstep. And that just doesn't work. You still got to do something about it. But I believe that you still got to have, you know, faith and belief in what it is that you're doing, and that the end result you will get it, but you've got to take action at some point.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let's do this. Let's shift gears a little bit. Let's talk about education, since that seems to have been the starting point for a lot of your journey. And this is one of my personal hot buttons, especially because you're talking about creativity and education. And, you know, I mean, I'm looking at education, and my ongoing joke is that I'm a failed byproduct of the education system, because I feel that it's a one-size-fits-all solution. And I'm really curious, you know, given the window that you had into education, what your thoughts are on the future of it, and you know, what our challenges are, and how we prepare people for a future that exists, or, as opposed to one that doesn't exist.
Man, that's a great question. I'm torn on this. You know, I have a young daughter who's 3.5, and so education has been a topic of discussion in our household a lot lately. You know, we just enrolled her in a Montessori school, where that learning environment is different than a traditional school. And we've seen the results in her in a very short period of time. You know, so in 2 months, we've seen a dramatic result in the way that she acts socially, in the things that she's learning, in her willingness and openness to want to try and learn different things. So I love that environment. I love what that environment has done for her, and that's a non-traditional schooling environment. I like the traditional schooling environment from the sense that there's a clear path, and I think a clear path is important for kids. I think it's in the sense that you know what you need to do to progress. And if you don't have a clear path, I think that people can feel lost, and there's no end in sight. You know, if you don't know your final destination, you have no idea what direction you're going. So I love the traditional model from just the standpoint of having a clear path. Okay. But when I look back on my education, you know, like I obviously went through high school, got my honors business degree at a well-known university here in Canada. And yet when I look back at all of the stuff that I learned, I don't even use, like, I would say 95% of it. Mm-hmm. And so I look at that as a huge waste. And so I don't know, man, I'm really torn on the whole education thing. I love traditional education, like I said, because it has a clear path, and that I think that that's important. But I'm seeing the benefits of other alternative methods, and we'll see. I mean, my wife and I are exploring that with Montessori to a certain extent. We'll see. And yet she's a traditional school teacher herself, my wife. So who knows? It's an interesting discussion nonetheless.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's you know, it consistently seems to be a hot button with everybody here on the show is, you know, what are we doing with education? And you know, it's funny, given what, you know, your primary business was, you know, Wishlist member, it's a form of it, you know, in many ways, you're in the business of education.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And we see that, you know, people have an opportunity now to dive deep in any area that they have an interest in. Mm-hmm. Somebody somewhere has developed some course material, I'm sure, and so there's an opportunity to learn whatever you want to learn at your own pace, wherever you want to learn. And so that's exciting. You know, that's exciting from the sense that there's never an end. If you love learning, there's never an end to as to how much you can learn. But that's kind of where I think the danger lies, in that it can take us in completely random and different directions, and there's not a focus. I really believe that it's important to have a focus and a track or a path that the traditional education system provides.
Yeah.
If there was a way to be able to combine those two worlds, I think that that would be the ultimate, where you could learn whatever you wanted to learn, but it still had some focus or direction. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point, because, you know, I've had this conversation with your professors who talk about online learning, and they say the rate, you know, for actual success with people who just educate themselves online is still nowhere near what it is with people who've gone through our traditional education system. And to your point, I think that focus is really one of those critical things, because I see this, you know, with the internet at our fingertips, there is literally something every day that you could be fascinated by. But, you know, I find that, you know, to build a lifelong career, it comes down to depth, longevity, and curiosity combined.
Yeah, I read a great book recently. It made it into my all-time top five, which is a book called Essentialism.
Funny, and, it's sitting on my desk.
It's an amazing book. And in there, there's a diagram where the author, Greg McKeown, he drew two circles and side by side. And in one circle, he drew all these little arrows coming out of the circle on the left. And then on the circle on the right, he drew one big arrow going all the way up to the top. And the diagram represents what a lot of us do, in that we do a whole bunch of little things, but we don't go deep into any one thing. And therefore, we don't make a lot of progress. So the circle on the left with all these little arrows, they're only going a very small distance from the center of the circle, because those are all the little efforts that we do in all these different directions. Whereas he said, the subtitle of the book is the title is Essentialism, and the subtitle is The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. And his whole thesis is the less you do, the more you will succeed, you know? And so the diagram on the right with that one arrow is just focusing on like one or two activities and just going deep with those. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the danger of letting anybody learn or wanting to learn anything at any time. We have that available to us, but if there's no structure, if there's no path, if there's no focus, we're going to be that diagram on the left where we've learned a whole bunch of little things, but we've never made any real progress toward any one thing. Mm-hmm. And so that's a really important thing when we're factoring in education and the benefits of doing it on our own versus doing it within a structured system.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, let's do this. Let's get into this idea of learning how to think creatively, which is really, I think, of tremendous interest to me personally, and I'm sure many of our listeners. You know, something you brought up is sort of the foundational piece of your work, at least when it started. Can you talk about that in more depth and how we can incorporate that into our lives and how it applies to what we're, you know, creating in the world?
Sure. So I was in third year university. We're sitting in a business class, a marketing class, and the teacher puts on this video. And in the video it was like a mini documentary of this guy named Doug Hall. And he has this business called Eureka Ranch. And at the time, this was like around year 2000. When he was running Eureka Ranch, the big, huge corporate Fortune 500 companies would pay anywhere between $150,000 to $200,000 for a weekend of brainstorming new product ideas with him. And in the video, he's wearing this Hawaiian shirt, he's in shorts, no shoes or socks, and he was shooting Nerf guns at these corporate CEOs. And for the first time, I thought, damn, that looks like an amazing place to work. And so I went out immediately and found out as much as I could about this guy, Doug Hall. And the business is still around today. I mean, he's done phenomenally well. He's written a number of books. The two of my favorite, the first one is that I read at that time was Jumpstart Your Brain. And it was all these creative thinking exercises, ways to get yourself thinking more creatively. And I did a deep dive into that book. And I started applying all of the little creative techniques to my schoolwork. And as I said, I failed out of my first year of university. I managed to get back in through doing extra credits in the summer and so forth. But second year, I barely scraped by. But third year, everything changed for me because of this class. And so, for example, I started asking myself when I was writing a 40-page essay, how could I make this fun for my professors to read? You know, I was putting myself in their position. I'm thinking, man, they've got like 70 kids in their class who all have 40-page papers due at the same time. And they've got to go through 70 40-page papers. That sucks. And so I thought to myself, how can I make my paper fun to read? And so I incorporated a game into mine. And so the first page that they would open, it basically detailed the components of the game. Now, I don't know if my paper was any good, but here's what I do know. That was the first paper in university that I ever got an A+ on. And everything from that point forward, my marks went sky high. And so I started applying these creative techniques to my schoolwork. I started applying them to my relationships. The next girl that I, you know, tried to win over, I eventually married. And the first date was this elaborate, creative first date. But here's what my thinking was at the time. I wanted to make a date so spectacular that even if the girl that I was dating didn't really want to be with me, just through her describing the date to her friends would get their attention, you know? And so, but it did. I ended up marrying that girl. Her name's Amy. She's the most incredible wife, the most amazing mom, but it all started with that first date. I used that creative techniques for when I was applying for jobs, you know? So that job that I talked about where I signed on the dotted line and got this amazing job with great pay and company car and benefits and all that, I used a lot of the creative techniques to be able to stand out in those job interviews. And there were hundreds and hundreds of us graduating students that applied for those jobs, and there was like multiple rounds of interviews. How the heck would a guy like me squeeze through all of those interviews? It was all through just trying to think a little more creatively about how to present myself, how to get the attention of the people that were interviewing me, and so forth. And then now in my corporate careers or in my entrepreneurial career, it's the same thing. You know, how do I get my products marketed, and how do I get the attention of more people? How do I develop relationships with key influencers? How do I come up with new product ideas? That all stems from being able to think more creatively. So here's the synopsis of it, if you will, or the summary. Creativity boils down to one key component, and that is stimuli. You want to surround yourself with as much stimuli as possible to engage your creative juices. And there are two types of stimuli. There are related stimuli and unrelated stimuli. So related stimuli would be like things that are related to what you're trying to do. So if you're trying to come up with a new marketing campaign, you would surround yourself with related stimuli of other marketing campaigns that perhaps you've done in the past, some campaigns that your competitors have done, campaigns that others have done in maybe other industries. That would be related stimuli. Unrelated stimuli would be like random things, like an orange, a glass of water, toilet paper, snow, trees, like things that are just completely random. And then the key to creative thinking is that you try to combine unrelated stimuli with related. You try to force connections. And what happens is you just want to come up with as many ideas as possible. And you want to let go of any limitations that you may think of, or that normally you would think, oh, no, this is stupid, or no, that has no connection or no relation. You want to let go of all of that. And you just want to try to come up with as many ideas as possible. Because the thing with creative thinking is the more ideas you come up with, the more better ideas you will end up with. One of the keys to creativity is coming up with as many ideas as possible. And through that, you will come up with, you know, a handful of really good ideas. So that's how I approach creativity. And in his book, Jumpstart Your Brain, Doug Hall provides a whole wide variety of different creative thinking techniques, games, and exercises that you can do. But really, that's the gist of it. Surround yourself with stimuli and try to come up and force different connections. By doing so, you'll come up with a lot of ideas. And through that big number of ideas, there will be a few gems. And that's ultimately what you should use.
Wow, that's pure gold. I'll link up that book in the show notes, but I'm going to ask you a question that I'm sure some people are curious about. Tell us about the first date.
So the first date involved a friend of mine went and knocked on this girl's door for me. And he delivered her an envelope with an invitation for a date that Friday. And so she accepted, even though she didn't know who it was. And so then on Friday, my friend showed up again. He had another envelope for her. And it had flower petals in the envelope. And it had a little riddle that and a map that took her to another location. And she got to that other location. And there was another envelope. And inside were more flower petals and another clue to another location. Where ultimately, I think there were four different clues. And she ultimately ended up at my front doorstep, where I was there with flowers, and then I took her out for a movie and dinner. And but the clues themselves were very telling. You know, they were like things that were meaningful to her, because we had been friends, and so I knew a little bit about her, and I think that's what really, you know, won her over, was the fact that there was a lot of meaning behind it. You know, and similarly, like when I proposed, when we got married, it was very similar. Like I wanted it to be very creative, something that she would never forget, and that, and I wanted to involve as many people as possible, but I didn't want them in on it. And so I did a similar sort of thing where, you know, it involved a lot of creativity, but ultimately it all panned out. And I think that that's a real gift that gets lost as we get older and as we become adults. And I even find myself now thinking like, man, I used to be way more creative back when I was younger, and how can I get back to that place? And now I'm trying to, you know, be more intentional about creating, you know, magical moments with people that we love and people that we want to develop better relationships with, because it's those magical moments that create memories. And people, now that's what deepens relationships, or great memories. And I think that there's an opportunity there for all of us when we can be more creative and create those memories. We'll deepen the relationships with the people that we love the most.
All right, everybody, let's take a quick break and thank today's sponsors. As I said at the beginning of the episode, it's that time of year when we need to be setting goals and determining what skills we'll need in order to accomplish those goals. That's where our sponsor for today's show, SkilledUp, comes in. Finding online courses in the areas you're interested in can be a real rabbit hole that causes you to waste a lot of time. SkilledUp curates the world of online and educational resources to bridge the gap between education and job skills. They put the best of all online learning under one roof, and online learning is flexible, self-paced, and affordable. They have courses in web design, photography, marketing, software development, business management, and much more. The bottom line is this: you have to keep improving your skills to navigate the world we live in today, and SkilledUp is a great place to do that. Acquiring new skills allows you to be more creative and build new things. They've also put together a free toolkit for innovative creators that you can download at promo.skilledup.com/creative. Again, that's promo.skilledup.com/creative. Our other sponsor for today is Pop Basic. Pop Basic helps you build your wardrobe one micro collection at a time. Each micro collection includes three items for under $100 that can be styled together. Past boxes have included a little black dress with two accessories, or a tank top with a skirt and a leather clutch. It makes a perfect holiday gift for somebody in your life. For $15 off, go to popbasic.com/creative. And remember, when you support our sponsors, you support our show. Now back to the episode. Beautiful. Let me ask you this. Throughout this journey, have there been any really, really challenging, sort of dark, sort of rock bottom moments? And talk to me about how you navigated those moments, if there were.
Yeah, two that come to mind. One was in 2010. Our lead developer for our software company, his name was Mike, he came to us, and at the time we were bootstrapped. There was four of us in the company: myself, my business partner Tracy, Mike, our lead developer, and one support customer support person. His name was Ray. So there was four of us, and the company was growing like crazy, and we were doing whatever we could to keep our head above water, in the sense that we had a lot of support that all of us were rolling up our sleeves and answering and responding to, and Mike was the only developer, so anything technical fell into his lap. And then in March 2010, Mike said to us, he's like, you know what, guys, I love you. This has been an amazing experience, but I really want to go out on my own and start my own business. And there was one side of us that was extremely happy for him. You know, he's a friend. We want to see him do well. We want him to see him go after what he wants to accomplish in life. But then on the other side, there's the business owner side of us that's saying like, oh crap, like, what are we going to do? Like, he's our main guy. And so we negotiated, instead of 2 weeks, that he would stay on for another month. And in that time, we tried to hire as many people, or we tried to hire someone that could operate on his level. And it was very difficult to find. Ultimately, we took a huge gamble and we ended up hiring 6 people. And it was a huge gut check moment, because we had to take a huge pay cut in order to do that. But it was a critical point in our company's timeline where, you know, if we were going to succeed, we had to kind of man up at that point. And so we hired the 6 people, and it was a rocky road. You know, it was really difficult. And then our software, Wishlist Member, was based on, it's built on a platform called WordPress, which is a blogging platform that I'm sure people in your audience are familiar with. And WordPress made some major updates and changes, and it just kiboshed our software, and we were getting inundated with support, and it was a disaster. And so Tracy, my business partner, was going to fly to the Philippines to meet with Mike, the developer that left to go out on his own. And he said to me, he's like, you know, I talked to Mike, and I'm going to hire him for a week of consulting to help us get the software figured out. And I'm going to fly over there in a couple weeks. And I said, okay. I said, I don't think that you should fly over there alone. I want to come with you. And he's like, okay. And then I said, and I don't think that we should hire Mike for a week of consulting. I think we should make him a partner in the business. And Tracy said, why? And I said, well, listen, dude, like, we're a software company, and both you and I are not developers. So we can't roll up our sleeves and fix things when crap hits the fan. I said, we need a partner who can do that. And Mike is the guy. You know, we haven't been able to find anybody that's on his level, and I think it's important. And so it took a lengthy conversation, and we finally figured it out. And so we flew over to the Philippines and we met with Mike. And I remember sitting down with him, and I said to him, you know, I asked him how his business is going. And he said to me, he said, well, it's been a bit challenging. He said, you know, like, there's a lot to running your own business. He said, I haven't even really found time to be able to do the kinds of things that I love, which is code and program. And secretly inside of myself, I was like, yes. but I said to him, I'm like, oh man, that sucks. And so we talked some more, and then I went into pitching him on coming up back and coming on as a partner. And the more I talked, the bigger the smile became on his face. And ultimately, at the end of it, he said, listen, I'd be stupid to say no. I'm in. And so I was like, thank the heavens. You know, that was thank goodness we got him back. And we're walking out of the coffee shop, and he turned to both of us and he said, can I be honest with both of you guys? And we said, well, yeah, of course, we would hope so. And he said, right before I came here to this meeting, my wife suggested that I actually ask for my job back. And I said, really? I said, well, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go back to your wife tonight, and I want you to tell her that you not only got your job back, but that you convinced us that you should be a partner in the business. I'm like, dude, if you do that, you're going to get the best sex that you've gotten in months. And so anyway, it was a great story, because he came back and it completely turned our company around. He built a whole development team around him, and everything took off. Our support got way better. Our product got way better, and the company growth just took off. So, I mean, that was a real critical point. The second dark time, if you will, and it wasn't really a dark time, but it was one of the most difficult decisions I've ever had to make, was recently when I decided to sell my interest in Wishlist. You know, I'd had something, I think on a subconscious level, I knew that it was time for me to move on to something new, but it was hard because I love my business partners. They're amazing guys. I love our team. We've got an incredibly talented team of developers and people who really care for the customer and designers. And it was just a very, very talented team. And I love our product. You know, like our product is being used by so many people around the world for so many good, you know, good things. It's so exciting for me to see all the ways our customers use our product. And financially, it was very fruitful. You know, like it, we were a multiple seven-figure a year company. It was a very success. It was a huge success. And so for me, it was, I'll never forget. I was at a family camp with my wife and my 3.5-year-old daughter, and we were sleeping in this cabin together, and it was a Saturday night and it was pouring down rain. So I couldn't go outside for a walk, and I couldn't turn the light on in the cabin because otherwise I'd wake my daughter and my wife up. And so I was just lying there from like 2 a.m. onwards, just wide-eyed, couldn't sleep, but in the pitch black. So I was alone with my thoughts in the darkness. And I think that it was meant to be. I was meant to be, have that moment of just being able to just think. And I couldn't do anything else but think. And that was important for me at that time. And so this was, I laid there just thinking about like, what really makes me happy? What really gets me excited? And what have I been neglecting? And what I realized in that moment was that a lot of what I was doing on a day-to-day basis was dealing with the urgent. And what I really wanted was to be able to spend more time on the important projects that I have wanted to do for a long time, but just kept getting pushed to the back burner because I just never had time, because everything that I was dealing with on a day-to-day basis was all about running the company and what's the next marketing promotion we're doing and what's the next product we're going to release and all those kinds of things. But there were a lot of things that I really wanted to do that were important to me that just kept getting pushed to the back burner. And the question I asked myself was, how long will I continue to push those things to the back burner? And the answer I came back with was, well, I didn't want to wait any longer. So if I didn't want to wait any longer, if I wanted to give those things the time that they deserved, that meant that I had to let go of something. You know, if you want to say yes to something, it means you're going to have to say no to something else. You can't keep saying yes to everything. And that's ultimately when I came to the conclusion that it was time for me to sell my interest in Wishlist and create the space for these new projects. And it was by far the most difficult decision. I still get emotional when I talk about it and when I think about it. But it was necessary. You know, it's necessary to make those difficult decisions in life if you really want to go after the things that are important to you. So those are two moments for me that were very difficult, but you know, you figure out a way through them and you just keep moving forward.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting you bring up difficult decisions, because I think that those are often pivotal and they're critical, because when you make a difficult decision, you put something on the line and that forces you to act. Your back is pretty much against the wall. And I think that's often how a lot of our gargantuan leaps in progress happen.
Yeah, I think if you don't, you can get comfortable. And I definitely found myself comfortable. You know, we had, like I said, we had built a great company. It was very profitable. Everything was running for the most part on autopilot, but we still needed to do a lot of work on the day-to-day basis to continue to update the product, support our customers, and so forth. But I had gotten comfortable, and what I realized was that there were a lot of things that I just really wanted to do that I needed space to be able to think and to breathe and to be able to be creative. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that when I was running a company. And so anytime I think there's all of us feel that to a certain level where we can feel it at a gut instinct. We know what the right decision is. The right decision was for me to sell my interest in my own company. But that's a difficult thing to come to terms with. And when I talked to my wife about it that very next morning, she knew that this was coming. It's like everybody else knew except myself, but I had to find the answer, you know, myself. I had to come to that conclusion myself. And she said to me, I said, when she woke up, I said, I think I want to sell Wishlist. And she said, tell me why. And so I told her that there were a number of projects that I was really excited about that I wanted to pursue. And and I wanted to go after, I needed space to be able to do that. And she totally understood. And she kind of smiled, and she said to me, like, I knew that this day would come. You know, I could see the friction that had been caused between where you would get excited about certain projects, but yet they would always get pushed to the back burner. And then the friction that would cause because you still had to do the day-to-day of marketing and maintaining wish lists. So I think that we all feel that at a certain level. And it's a matter of listening to that friction and listening to that gut instinct and going toward that fear versus running away from it.
Well, I think that makes a brilliant way to wrap up our conversation. So I want to ask you one final question, which is how we close all our interviews at The Unmistakable Creative. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
Wow. Man. I don't quite know how to answer that. here's what I do know. We live in the greatest time ever. We live in the greatest time ever for learning. We talked about that today. We live in the greatest time ever for doing business. There is no time in the history of man that I would rather be alive than right now. And I think this is an opportunity to be unmistakable in so many ways. It just depends on who you are. You have the opportunity now to reach more people, to impact more lives, to create change in whatever way you want to create change that has never been available to any of us ever before. And so that's, for me, what makes this the best time to live in. It's the thing that fires me up about doing business. It's the thing that fires me up about using my business for greater good. You know, one of the things we didn't talk about here today was that my wife and I have a charity where we build schools over in Kenya. And I believe that if we as entrepreneurs want to have change and impact, we're the ones that can do it. You know, there's no sense in hoping that somebody else is going to create that change for us. We have the opportunity. And as entrepreneurs, we're the only ones that have the skill set to be able to make something out of nothing. And from that value, we can then, we get compensated for that value that we create. And we can invest that compensation into our own lives. We can invest it into the lives of our loved ones. We can invest it into the lives of complete strangers. But we are a steward at that point of the value that we create. And I think that that's an opportunity that has never been available on the scale and the magnitude that it is today. And that is what makes an unbelievable time for each and every one of us. So when you ask about, you know, being unmistakable, I think that we all have an opportunity to be that in any which way that we want. And there's never been a greater time to do that than there is today. And I just hope that people take that next step, you know, take that step towards the project or the business or the nonprofit or whatever it is that you want to do that's in your heart, that's at your gut instinct that you really want to pursue. Do it today, because today is the greatest opportunity to be able to do that ever available to any one of us. And it's an opportunity that we should definitely go after. And so, that's what I believe, and I think that it's a great time to be alive, it's a great time to be in business, and it's a great time to really go after our dreams.
Amazing. Well, Stu, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights and your story with our listeners here at The Unmistakable Creative. This has been really, really fun and mind-blowingly cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and for those of you guys listening, I'll link up everything Stu mentioned in the show notes, and we'll wrap with that. If you like what you heard, the greatest compliment you could give us is to share the show with a friend and let people know what you think by leaving a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening to The Unmistakable Creative.